All right, we're going to preview Bama at LSU, Georgia going to Ole Miss. The Saints finally fired Dennis Allen, and college basketball starts today. Welcome to the Monday remote but still super fun edition of Cranny Crunch.
Hey, everybody out there listening, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, it does not matter. We're just appreciative of you listening. Please leave us a 5-star review or a 6-star review if that's available now. I don't know if it is, but make sure you subscribe to the show on all platforms.
LSU versus Alabama. When these two college football heavyweights duke it out, we all win as college football fans. It's always a great watch. The field's always littered, not with bottles or trash, but NFL players and incredible finishes. And this year's version will be no different. But believe it or not, there is even more at stake. Because this game's pretty much an elimination game on two fronts. The programs care about the most, a conference championship on one, and a college football playoff berth in the other. The stakes could not be higher for either team. A third regular season loss would relegate you to normal boredom, which for these fans equals boredom. The venue in Baton Rouge will once again be cloaked in night and fanaticism. Because these type of games is why you dream as a little boy, the ones you really want to play in at a high level in college football. And make no mistake, it's still going to come down to one thing, physicality. Which team will push the other around and will take the other side's will? Which group of men from either side will set the tone at the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball and be willing to stick their face in it when it matters most? Which group wants to claw and fight to the death if that's what it takes? And it may take that. Both teams want this, but only one can have it. Shout out our boy B-Lo. So go get it, fellas. We're going to be watching with bated breath and beer in hand to see which Titan's going to walk away smiling and who will come away with the agonizing realization that the big dream is dissipated and the fun's over. All right, David Cone, former Michigan quarterback, my brother. Former Western State Colorado wide receiver Blaine Crane. Guys, I want to get into the nuts and bolts of this. We want to know what you think in the chat. Again, thank you guys for joining us. Hit that subscribe button. No calls today. Going to be back maybe next week. We'll see when the election ends. Who knows at this point. But Cone, I want to start with you here. When you're looking at this game, we all know how big this game has become. You look through the past of Saban being at LSU, then being at Alabama. These two teams dominating the SEC West for the most part. But what is one thing, what is one key for each side that you're looking at in this game?
You know, how many times have we seen Alabama and LSU meet as undefeated foes where the winner has a chance to win the division and go to the SEC championship and at least the last 10 years possibly go to the college football playoff? And now we sit here, both of these teams are 6-2, and yet because of the new format of college football, the implications are equally as massive. Right? Like, that's what I find so fascinating about this game. I mean, you got to start first things first, which is, you know, LSU has struggled to run the football consistently, and Alabama on defense has struggled to stop the run. I think that's where most people are going to start when they analyze this football game. So something in that equation has to give, right? And LSU did get something going against a South Carolina defense, and we saw what they just did against Texas A&M. I think as time goes on, maybe not from the jump, but as time goes on in this football game, LSU will find moments and opportunities to be able to run the football. The question is, will that take all of the pressure that we've been talking about off of Garrett Nussmeier to feel like he has to do everything? Because that really gets to the heart of the matter, which is quarterback turnovers. Garrett Nussmeier, Jalen Milroe, which one of them is going to make the big plays without creating the big turnover? And I think it is worth mentioning that obviously both teams are coming off their bye before this game, just like they always do. But Alabama's best half of football was that first half against Georgia when they were coming off their first bye week. That's really something to consider here, as they're going to have to go into Death Valley. And if they can put points on the board early, the more points they can put on the board early, they have a better opportunity to take this crowd out of it, which is going to even up the advantage. And that's their best chance, in my opinion.
I agree with you 100%. And I want to go back to the run game that you're talking about, Blaine. I want to get your thoughts as well. But I'm going into this game believing that what I have seen is who they're going to be, right? Regardless of where this game is played, You mentioned LSU struggles to run the ball. The pass protection's been pretty good. And Alabama, I think, has struggled to run the ball consistently. And I don't know how healthy Jalen Milroe really is, right? And because that's such a bigger deal when you're the type of player, the archetype of player that Jalen Milroe is, when Nick Sheridan can truly get a hat on a hat by calling power read, cue power, the zone reads more effective. Hell, when the play breaks down, if you're in man coverage with the DB's back turn being able to take off, if Jalen Milroe isn't able to run it as effectively, right, or create and keep the play alive as effectively, and it turns into a game of we know what you're going to do, who can do it better, Blaine, do you think LSU has the advantage because their offensive line, I think, is better than Alabama's in pass pro, and Alabama's going to run a lot of man coverage on defense, including in important downs. We see how much man free they run. We see how much two-man they run. They will run split coverage. They will run some zone coverage. But the longer I have to protect in man, the harder it is to cover. It's hard to cover for a long time either way, but Jalen Milroe's running ability could be the difference in this game. And if he's hampered by an injury, that cuts off a huge, huge, huge vessel for this Alabama team to not only stay on schedule, but make up for maybe getting a false start in Death Valley, maybe being in second 12 and trying to hit that big play.
Well, I think LSU already has a built-in advantage because of where this game is being played at. It is 6:30 at Death Valley, LSU, Alabama. I really don't know if it gets any bigger than this. Right now, the first thing I look at, if it's on the Alabama side, it is the health of my quarterback. Alabama is at their best when Jalen Milroe is running the football, not just scrambles, but quarterback design runs. And if he's not healthy, I don't know if they can do that. And that'll be trouble. That'll constrict their offense. I'll flip it to the other side. Nussmeier with all these turnovers, it can't happen in a game like this because you will find yourself getting snowballed by an Alabama team if you throw three picks. And I think a lot of this guy has to come down to who can really trust their identity. Sooner or later, one of these teams is going to have to trust to run the football. I don't want to see Jalen Milroe throw it 40 times. I don't want to see Nuss throw it 40 times. You're going to have to turn around and hand the ball off. And I think whichever team can stick to that identity enough, I'm not saying you have to run the ball 80%, but make it at least honorable on the other side, has a really good chance to win this football game.
Well, I mean, who can line up on third and two when I know you're running it, you know you're running it, God knows you're running it, everybody knows you're running it, and be able to get it? Not that you have to get 10 yards on that play, but be able to get 2.5. That's going to dictate it because now as an offensive coordinator, I feel like the handcuffs are off me. If I'm sitting there in third and one, third and two, and I'm going heavy personnel, right? I'm going 12 personnel or I'm going 11 and I still want to kind of tighten things up. You know, if I don't trust it, is Joe Sloan going to say, you know what, we're going to go RPO. We're going to go play action and try and throw it on third down. With Jalen Milroe, you can probably get away with it a little bit more because of the fear of his legs. But I feel like LSU has kind of a narrower path. And, you know, when I brought up and we've been talking about the turnovers for Garrett Nussmeier in some of these games, it kind of looked like he alleviated the problem somewhat, but then it has reared its head a little bit. We saw it against A&M. You know, you look in that Ole Miss game. I know LSU found a way to win it in the end. But this is a game where the margin of error is going to be so small. And which team gets that confidence early? Cone, which team sets that tone early, like I talked about in the open, to say, you know what, everybody's been hyping up this game. We know it's an elimination game. And put that other team on their back foot. And I want to make a point that, you know, we try and talk about a decent amount here, but it doesn't get talked about a lot in the college football media world. And that's special teams. It's not just who can make a field goal. It's not just block punts and big returns. It's field position. Make no bones about it. This game is going to come down to who has the best field position throughout a four-quarter game. So when you look at the complementary football phase, offense, defense, and special teams, nothing helps out an offense or a defense more than good starting field position, especially if you're a road team. If Alabama can come out and get the ball around midfield their first drive after a big stop, or, you know, they're able to pin LSU back on that first drive, therefore flipping the field when they get the ball back. That's going to be huge because who's ever having to play catch up in this game is going to be in big trouble.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm glad you brought that up because if I'm Kalen DeBoer, I'm bringing up three things this week. In addition to all of the things we're doing with install and, hey, don't turn the football over and those sorts of things, three things to make sure that the team doesn't forget throughout the week. And you brought up a couple of them. One, we can't afford any special teams mistakes in this game. And I think it's going to be incumbent on Kalen DeBoer to identify early which direction this is going to go. Is this going to be a shootout type game where we're having to go for fourth and ones in plus territory and we're having to go for 2-point conversions early? Or is this going to be more of a field position game? Either way, we can't afford any special teams mistakes. You know, another point is the penalties. I would be making sure to say, like, hey, us in Death Valley, we have to win the penalty battle. And to go into that environment and that atmosphere as a team that's been very heavily penalized is you're already, you know, kind of set up for failure in that. I would be preaching to this team, we have to win the penalty battle throughout this entire game. And then another thing with Blaine, with what you were talking about, or maybe it was Jake, you know, that environment, I would be showing this team the ending of the Ole Miss football game just to show them, because some of these guys, maybe they haven't been to a night game at Death Valley. Mm-hmm. When you talk about Jake getting the confidence early on in this game, I'd be saying, do you see how imperative it is for us to score early? Because when that crowd is in this football game late, and even God forbid an overtime scenario, that crowd just absolutely suffocates opponents.
No, without a doubt. And Blaine, I want to talk to something, and we talk about winning the water cooler here. I want to go behind the scenes a little bit. And David, you brought up, you know, maybe some of the guys, the Ryan Williams, some of these other players haven't played in this type of environment, even though, you know, they've played in some big ones already, including going on the road. They've gone up to Wisconsin. I can go down the list, but it's different in Death Valley. You know, we talk about, can some teams get up enough to play? Mm-hmm. But there is a real thing about being too emotional going into mm-hmm. a game, being too overhyped, right? And even older guys, like if you're Jalen Milroe, you don't have to go try and make a heroic play every play, brother. You don't. What you need to do is what you did in the first half against Georgia. You take what's there, and when they show you their throat, you stomp on it. That's what I thought he did an incredible job of. And it's not just completing, right, the balls underneath. But I think Alabama's going to have some space underneath to operate. Jalen doesn't have to say, you know what, Ryan Williams on the 9 route, I'm going to throw it up and let's go get it. Or I'm going to throw it back across my body and make this incredible play. Or I'm going to roll out, make a guy miss, and then throw it back across the field to try and hit a guy that's streaking. You don't have to, man. If the hitch is there, throw the hitch. If the slant's there, throw the slant. The dig's there, pound the dig. And when you set their ass up to hit them down the field off play action, that's when you go for the throat, including in the red zone. Because guess what? There ain't nothing wrong with second and six, man. But you can be, Blaine. Can you just talk about, because you're like me and David, I never saw you before a game, but I've seen my brother before a game. I've seen as a coach and a player, and he's seen me. You can get over emotional to the point where it screws you up almost. Like you're under emotional from a focus standpoint. You do like Puka Nacua, like yesterday, right? Getting over emotional about that game and throwing a punch early after a guy pushed him late. You can't do that in this game because it can cost you.
A good saying I always like to say, you can get lost in the sauce and you can get lost without the sauce, right? You have to find that good balance. It's channeled rage, it's channeled violence to where you know where you need to get to and you're going to dominate that guy, but you have to know your assignments throughout football. And I thought David brought up a great point, and you did too, David. I don't think this moment is going to be too big for the Alabama players. I think Ryan Williams is built for stuff like this. Jalen Milroe played in bigger games. I think the huge three things you need to look at in this game, and y'all brought them up, special teams, pre-snap penalties, and the biggest one to me is who wins third downs. Right? Who wins third down? Because usually when you average up teams like this that are a lot alike in different ways, whoever wins the third down battle usually is going to come out of this game with the
win. And they're usually going to win time of possession. Yeah. And that could be huge, especially for the road team in kind of dampening down the spirit as much as you possibly can of the LSU team. Well, I'm gonna get to the chat. Make sure you hit that subscribe button. David, you got anything else before we go to the chat?
No, I would just say if I'm picking one of those stat category battles to win, that's the biggest, right? Like we've hit on so many and they're trying to preach so many things, but if there's just one that's the biggest to me, it's turnovers. I just don't think the loser of the turnover battle wins this game.
I agree 100%. All right, Blaine, let's get to the chat.
All right, Chad, hit that like and subscribe button. If you donate, it's on topic. It will get read. Excuse me. We're going to start the day off with Tofosi. What's up, man? LSU at home. Bama better head coach. Bama better quarterback. Milroe QB run will go wild. Same way Reed did versus LSU. I like Bama, and I like them big.
Well, I mean, I think you could talk me into either side here. But the question is, what version of Alabama are we going to get? Are we going to get a disciplined version of Alabama? That's been one of the biggest problems, right? We know there's going to be great players on both sides of the ball, and we can talk about LSU's defense, right? Getting better, stopping being the biggest weak link on their team, even though the offense isn't what it was last year. But what version of this Bama team are we going to see? How disciplined will they be? And again, that's not just from a penalty standpoint. That's from an alignment and an assignment standpoint too. I mean, it all goes hand in hand. So we can sit here and do the category of, well, I like this position group better than that position group. I like this coach better than this coach. But at the end of the day, Alabama's got to go play discipline. We saw them do that against Wisconsin, right? We saw them do that in the first half against Georgia. Can that travel down to Baton Rouge in a hostile environment, in an elimination game where you got to keep your head on a swivel? And Blaine talked about controlled aggression, but it's discipline. That's what has Alabama fans really nervous, including my wife. She says it every game we watch Alabama. She's like, man, we just don't look as disciplined as we used to be.
Yeah.
If you get a disciplined Alabama, Alabama, I think overall is the better team. If Jalen Milroe is effective running the ball. And if neither quarterback is effective running the ball, I think Nussmeier overall is a better
throw. And David, I think there's a reason why this game's over-under is at 58.5.
Yeah, that's why I was going to ask you how you guys felt about the lines right now. -2.5 Alabama, the lowest I've seen, it's -2. And then the over-under 58.5. Do you think that's right?
I mean, it sounds about right. I mean, yeah. this feels like a, you know, a 31-28 type game to me, a 31-27, 34-31 type game. As far as picking a side, if Alabama was +2.5, I'd buy him up and get him at +3.5. But since LSU's +2.5, I'll buy you up a point and get you at +3.5. Give me the hook on top of the field goal for the dog. That's kind of where I sit with it right now.
It felt like a true pick'em, Blaine. What'd you think? Do you like the 2.5?
I agree. If I'm going to touch any in this game, I would play with the home team, get it a 3.5 with that field goal. And I would play the under. We talk about this all the time. Usually when two teams with great offense play each other, I wouldn't be expected.
Here's one reason why the under scares me. If neither team is able to run the ball, that means you're going to have to do what? You're going to have to throw it. And the more you throw it, the more incompletions or big plays you're going to get, which when it comes down to this game kind of smells like overtime, guys.
Yeah,
Wouldn't be the first time we've seen this when Alabama and LSU. Remember the last time Bama went down there and LSU decided to go for two and go for the win? I would not be shocked at all if we get some extra football.
That's why a good bet, and I don't have the line right in front of me, but we can find it, is an under in the first half. Right. Yeah. Then you don't have to worry about overtime. Then you don't have to worry about the clock quite as much. I think both teams are going to be punching each other in the mouth for that first half. The under there might be the best play.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to the crib. What's up, man? He says, Brian Kelly owns night games at LSU. He likes LSU by double digits. That home stadium is just different.
Well, I mean, you can get some great value on them now. And yes, I mean, I will continue to say, regardless of what the new EA Sports video game says or anybody else says, LSU at night is the best home field advantage in college football. I really think it is. You can make a case that maybe there's three of them together, but if I had to rank any environment number one, it is going to be LSU. It's absolutely nuts. It's wild. It's everything that is great about college football. And it's why we don't need to play stupid-ass neutral site games during the regular season.
I'd be a little surprised if LSU is just straight up double digits better than Alabama. Yeah. But a scenario that may come into effect is, let's say there's a 4-point lead late and Alabama's really having to push it in a 2-minute drill, something like that, and then you get a pick six or a strip sack fumble to the house. You know, and then they win by 10 or 11 like that. That could happen.
Yeah, let's go to Sam Kim. What's up, Sam? He says, this is a pick 'em game to me. I'm taking LSU, but I still think Brian Kelly is a douchebag. Minus him, I really like LSU.
Well, look, I mean, you know, we're going to talk about Dennis Allen getting fired at the Saints. I mean, it's great to be a nice guy, but if you just want to be a nice guy, start a nonprofit. This is about winning and losing.
All right, let's go to CWM. What's up, man? He said, do you think Nuss will throw at least two interceptions in this game? If he does, I like Bama by big numbers.
Well, I mean, if you told me he was going to throw multiple interceptions, I would tell you I'd like Bama to win the game. Maybe not huge, but I'd like him to win the game. I think the question is, if the over-under was set at 1.5 interceptions, would you take the over or would you take the under? I think both quarterbacks are going to turn the ball over at least once. Mm-hmm. What would worry me about Nussmeier, and I've continued to say this, and LSU fans thought we were crazy to one point and then agreed with us, then thought we were crazy again, and now they agree with us again. It's amazing how that works, is Nussmeier under pressure. Because what happens a lot of times with anticipatory throwers, and David, I think you'll agree with this, is, yeah, replacing the blitz with the ball when you realize the blitz is coming. Well, that's not easy, but it pretty much presents itself. It's when the blitz gets shown from one side and the pressure comes from the other, and you want to anticipate a throw to the side you thought you were going to. When you let that go, if the coverage is different, is that going to cost him? That's what, when I look at Garrett Nussmeier, has kind of cost him on some of these turnovers.
Well, as far as the two interception comment, yeah, Garrett Nussmeier could certainly turn the football over twice. The problem is Jalen Milroe could do the same thing, and then you're kind of back at square one in terms of the turnover battle there.
Yeah, true. All right, one more, Blaine.
I was going to Drake Tassin. Drake, what's up? He says, you also got to consider the weather could be very rainy on Saturday due to the tropical storm that's forming right now in the Caribbean.
Yeah, it's Monday. Like, as somebody that grew up in the South and went to South Alabama on the coast, holler at me Thursday. I'll have a lot better idea then. But, yeah, if we're going to play the bad weather game, who does that favor more? To me, I think it favors LSU.
Yeah.
One, because you're at home, and two, a wet track evens out the speed, just like a thick track does. Why do you think Notre Dame keeps that grass so thick? And I don't know.
Don't you think it'd favor Bama a little bit with the running game of Alabama?
I'm 50-50 on it, man. I don't know. It's That's the question, though. What if the weather's ugly and both teams are having trouble running the football? Then what happens? Is it just a turnover fest because we're trying to throw our way to a win?
Well, I mean, again, I think you look at which wide receiver group do you trust the most on quick game, whether that be now screens, bubble screens, and which tight end is a better security blanket. I don't think Mason Taylor is going to get talked about enough this week week leading up to this game. It's one of the most we talk about Ferguson at Oregon. We talk about Colson Loveland. We talk about McCormick at Miami. Mason Taylor doesn't get a lot of love, and he's played in a lot of big games. I think he's a guy, especially when you get to the red zone. Garrett Nussmeier, he's a coach's kid. He understands the importance in the matchup of a tight end. Again, if it's a rainy, nasty game and Jalen Milroe can't get out and run and create, I think it kind of evens him up from the running game with Nussmeier a little bit. And I think Nussmeier is a better thrower overall in wet weather than what Jalen Milroe is, because I think he's a better thrower overall in general, not by wide margins, not by an ocean, but I don't think it's a crazy thing, and I think a lot of Alabama fans will agree with me that Nussmeier is probably a better overall thrower. But regardless of whether the weather's good or the weather's bad, these quarterbacks got to be responsible. All right, you got to be a responsible man, whether you're in shotgun, whether you're under center, delivering the pill to your guys, handing the ball off, play action, whatever, and you need to be a responsible man, right? Maybe you don't play quarterback for LSU, Doug, Jeff, Sean, or Bama, but you got to take care of yourself, and you're not getting the vitamins you need. And if you are, I promise you, you're not. All right. You may think that, but with a responsible man, it's a multivitamin that has 33 key ingredients. It's great for your heart, great for your muscles, great for your memory, sharpens your immune system as well. And by the way, it doesn't have a terrible taste to it. It doesn't sound like you found it in Hagrid's old boot. So when you go to responsibleman.com, you can also get 60% off on this Black Friday sale when you use code Booster, BOOSTER. Ladies, maybe you're trying to make sure your guy gets the vitamins and nutrients he needs, all right? Because we know our diets today aren't getting them. I mean, wait till you see what I'm eating tonight, all right? I'll get to the Good Ranchers ad later. But when you go to responsibleman.com, use code Booster, you get that 60% off. You can take advantage of the responsibility and being responsible. Remember, America, a strong America needs responsible men. Responsible men start with responsible man. All right, let's move on here. Let's get to this. Just another one. Let's go ahead and pivot just to another absolutely massive game. Remember, no call-ins today. We'll get to donations. If they're on topic, they will get read. I know we already got some in there. We'll get to them at the end if they're not on topic. But, guys, the second mega matchup of the weekend, Georgia going to Ole Miss in what for Ole Miss is an elimination game for the playoff and the SEC championship. For Georgia, yes, they have the one loss. A 10-2 Georgia, I think, still gets in to the college football playoff. But I don't think a two-loss Georgia with those two losses, if they did lose to Ole Miss, would get into the SEC championship. David, the Ole Miss we saw last week, all right, compared to the Georgia we saw last week, I think the confidence levels offensively are going to be a little bit different because Carson Beck is becoming a problem for Georgia right now, something we never thought we'd say. And while the defense is really good, it's not as elite as the ones we've seen in the past. If you're an Ole Miss fan, how much better should you feel about your team and this year's matchup against Georgia going into this week as opposed to any big game in the past? And I'm going to make a Penn State comparison in a second, David, but go ahead.
I mean, given the fact that Ole Miss is 7-2, struggled for a few weeks, you know, hadn't put up more than 30 points in four consecutive weeks. This is the best possible scenario for you to host Georgia. I mean, think about it for a few reasons. One, the offensive performance that you're coming off of. Not that just, oh, well, we put up record-setting, you know, numbers against Arkansas, that alone is going to help you win the football game, but it's a confidence standpoint, right? When you've had to hear week after week after week, man, what happened to the Ole Miss offense? They've just gone in the closet and they're hiding away. To have a performance like that the week before you play what could possibly be one of the best defenses in the country, to the psychology that's going on in the locker room right now, I think is healthy, and I think it benefits Ole Miss. And then second of all, think about this. You catch Georgia coming off of a rivalry game against Florida and a week before that they're going to have to go and play, hold on one second, they're going to host Tennessee. So imagine that. You get them after Florida, but before Tennessee. I think that's a great chance to catch them. And then guess what? You also get them at home, which I think is the third biggest factor for Ole Miss here. And yeah, I mean, if you tell me right now that Georgia, it was easy for Georgia to get up for the Texas game. Number one team in the country. You're playing them at Austin, and no one's giving you a chance to beat Texas except for us, of course, right, with Mr. Jeff Foxworthy. But no one was giving them a chance to win the game. It was easy for the Georgia football players and for Kirby to motivate them to get up for Texas. My question is, with LSU, with their backs against the wall, like you said, can't afford another loss or you're out of the college football playoff. Georgia, with one loss, did they get up for Ole Miss the same way that it was easy to get up for Texas? Because if the answer is yes, I think Georgia wins the football game. If the answer is no, and you play with your food for a little while on the road and you let this Ole Miss offense cook the way they did it a week ago, well, guess what? You're going to be 7-2 when you host Tennessee.
And I totally get that methodology. Where I'm at on it, and there's a couple things in this game, and we'll get to schematically, you know, what they have to do. And it's pretty obvious for Georgia offensively what Carson Beck has to stop doing. But, you know, if this was in the past where Georgia was so much more superior than Ole Miss was at the line of scrimmage, including Ole Miss's defense to Georgia's offense, a lot of people are going to be talking about Georgia's defense going up against Ole Miss's offense. And I get it. It's Kirby Smart versus Lane Kiffin. But I think this game is going to be flipped and went on the other side. Ole Miss brought in these defensive players and built this team to negate the huge advantage that Georgia has had in the past on the line of scrimmage. Because at any point, Georgia, even if they weren't playing prolific and playing really well, could kind of go back to their bread and butter and find a way to get past Ole Miss. We saw that to a certain extent last year. But to me, I think this Ole Miss defense, you can make the case, is as good as Georgia's defense overall, or as close as they've ever been. Yeah. And if we're sitting here, which we are in this point in time, saying this Georgia offense is struggling with turnovers. You look at the number that Carson Beck's having, and it's not just tip balls or blown assignments in pass pro that ends up getting the quarterback hit or the receiver falls down. He's making very questionable decisions, including throwing the ball over the middle of the field. It's almost like he's struggling with what Jackson Dart struggled with in the past in seeing those intermediate defenders. But if we're going to sit here and say this game is going to come down to which offense can move the ball at a higher rate, and it's even on defense, I like Ole Miss here, Cone. And I know last week, James Franklin fooled me. Him and Andy Kotelnicki fooled me. I thought Penn State was finally ready to get over that hump, finally ready to win that big game to put themselves on top of the perch, right, over Ohio State and in the Big Ten. Ole Miss is in somewhat of a similar spot. Now, they haven't been knocking at the door as long as Penn State has. But through all the bad, losing to Kentucky at home, right, losing to LSU after leading the whole game, really, until the end and then losing in overtime, you have an opportunity in Oxford with a team that can do it to finally exorcise these demons. If I was Lane Kiffin, I'd dress up like the Exorcist before this game. I'd get a shaman. I'd get from every religion ever to go in that locker room and exorcise the demons. But I think this Ole Miss team is as prepared as ever. But is that mental, that devil on your shoulder, right? The guy saying, hey, you can't do it. You're still Ole Miss. You're not Georgia. You'll never be Georgia. You can't win this game because you're not supposed to win this game. Can you get over that hump? Because if Lane can, and this team can, with Jackson Dart and all this experience that they have, I think this could catapult this Ole Miss team into being dangerous to win the college football playoff. I really actually believe that. I don't think they're going to make the SEC championship, even if they win this game, but they would get into the playoff. Look who they got left, David. That game at Florida, I know that Billy Napier came out and said Lagway may not miss the rest of the season, but if he's not able to run like he normally runs, that really takes away the best arrow in his quiver. Not that he's a bad thrower, but that makes that game a lot more winnable. And then you're going to play a Mississippi State team that's just not ready yet. So this is a play-in game to me for Ole Miss. So all the marbles are on the table for them. For Georgia, if you lose it, you're still alive. Not that you're not going to play as hard or whatever, but you still have a chance. And for that reason, right now, at least right now, I am leaning toward Ole Miss winning this game, David. I know they're an underdog. I think it's 2.5.
Yes,
right? It's funny. Both home teams, Ole Miss and LSU, are underdogs in this game. But when you look schematically, if you're Mike Bobo right now, Cone, and Carson Beck, who isn't somewhat experienced guy, but has been struggling lately, how much do you trust to be able to have him drop back and throw the ball 30 times? Because this Ole Miss front seven will get after your ass, just like the Georgia front seven will.
Well, when you talk about that little devil on the shoulder, that's me. I'm going to be that little guy on the shoulder this week, because the Penn State beating the Buckeyes analogy is so apropos. Until I see Lane Kiffin lead this Ole Miss team to a win over the Georgias of the world and even over the Alabamas of the world, who they won't get this season, but until I see it, then I really can't believe it. But like I said, the circumstances are set up better for them than they could ever be, even better than if Ole Miss were coming in here undefeated. I know that there would be a great confidence boost in that, but to me, with no margin for error with the two losses, I think you're set up better. Now, to the Georgia side of things, to answer the question you just asked, yeah, I mean, the biggest problem Georgia, the biggest negative for Georgia right now is Carson Beck turning the football over at this rate. It's the worst I've ever seen him play. The best positive for Georgia right now is Carson Beck is turning the football over at a clip we've never seen, and yet you're still 7-1. Now, like we said yesterday on the recap, Georgia's defense is really, really good. I don't think they're good enough to win the national championship or maybe even the SEC championship if Carson Beck continues to play this way. Fortunately for the Bulldogs, he still has the capability to be one of the best quarterbacks in the country. He still has the capability to live up to that preseason Heisman favorite hype, right? So as far as Mike Bobo goes and the tactics of it, you got to get the run game going, obviously, to build the play action off that. I think if you can go play action off that and even roll him out, maybe take half of the field out of the equation, like that's going to make things a little simpler for him. Obviously, when he throws a post or when he bangs a dig route, it's as good as it gets in the country. There's something going on mentally with his inability to read through these coverages right now. And I think maybe going at pace is the biggest thing to help. When we saw the second half of that Alabama game, when you said, hey, this game is lost, there's no hope whatsoever unless you just throw every read out the window and go as fast as you possibly can. What happened in the second half of that Alabama game? That's when they really started to cook. Maybe we need to come into a game with that mentality. Yes. I know it's counterintuitive. Sometimes you think, well, wait, a quarterback that's struggling, don't you want to slow the game down more than even going fast? I'm not saying go warp speed out of our mind, but some tempo here and there, some up pace, I think could help him a little bit.
No, and David, I was just going to say that. And if you're Kirby Smart, you're a defensive guy, you cannot fall in that trap. You cannot fall in that trap of trying to protect Carson Beck. Because what a better Trojan horse move than everybody talking about Lane Kiffin and this Ole Miss offense and the creativity, and you know that he's got some stuff dialed up and he's been waiting to do this. Why not, if you're Georgia, go in there and go up tempo early, right when you get the ball? Hell, if I win the coin toss, I may take the ball and start going fast. It takes a lot of thinking out of it for Carson Beck. You can maybe catch that Ole Miss defense on their heels, and maybe that's one way to open up the run game. Because I know Pete Golding all week is looking at those defensive guys and saying, if we shut down the run, we shut down their dreams. If we stop the run, we stop our inability to be able to win a big game. If we can do that and put it on Carson Beck, he is going to fold. But if you go fast and you throw that punch early and you get that defense back on their heels, you're going to be the aggressor. And maybe that's what starts igniting it. Then all of a sudden the defense is feeding off of it. Like, holy hell, the offense came to play, boys. Mikael Williams and all the studs that Georgia still has running around. But on the other side, if you're Ole Miss and you're Lane Kiffin, Blaine, I'm looking right now telling the guys on offense, hey, we are going to go out. We are not going to play this thing close to the vest. You cannot Andy Kotelnicki this game like he did at Penn State and play scared and not get creative, because if you call the game scared, the players are going to know it and they're going to play scared or play not to screw up, and that's a death sentence. And if you're Ole Miss and you get up early, right, let's say you get up 10-0 like Penn State did, Now all of a sudden, does Georgia panic on offense? And now it's, well, Carson Beck's got to throw it 35 times, which means he's going to put it in harm's way. That crowd starts feeding into it, and then you find it snowballing for you.
Well, it feels like Georgia's been panicking on offense almost the entire year. And if Carson Beck throws three interceptions, you can go ahead and walk yourself out of this game because you're going to get buried by Ole Miss. Remember what Ole Miss did to Arkansas last week? Dropped 63 points. And, Jake, you talked about it all the time. Where's the fun been in this Ole Miss offense? Well, damn it, they looked like they had fun last week in that game. And you walk away to, you walk into this game right now, and if you're a Georgia fan, really, what are you feeling good about? ETN's banged up in the backfield. You don't have a lot of creators on the outside. Your defense is your defense. Not as good as we're used to seeing. But right now, Ole Miss is last week. And that pass rush for Ole Miss is for real, guys. It is. Yeah, it's just going to come down to, and what's been the weakness to Ole Miss this entire year, it's up front. Can Ole Miss withstand up front? I think Lane Kiffin will do a great job play calling standpoint to kind of neutralize that. But this is a really interesting game. I think it might come down to the premier names, and that's that quarterback and Jackson Dart and Carson Beck.
And I know Paris Jr., the running back's hurt, which is tough for Ole Miss. We'll see how good Harris is on the outside. He's been beat up. You know, didn't see him last week. They didn't need him. Believe me, no. Jordan Watkins and Caden Lee.
And they needed another star.
But what's funny is you're like, well, guys, you know, and I know people, and I'm going to get to the chat in 1 second, but people are going to be like, well, the last time people doubted Georgia, they went on the road, you know, and dominated Texas 30-15. They did. I agree with that. But the offense still didn't play great in that game for Georgia. And I don't know with Jackson Dart and some of these weapons, and I know Quinn Ewers is a good player. I think Jackson's got a little bit more dog in him, and he can run. The quarterback run game for Ole Miss, it doesn't have to be prolific. It doesn't have to be elite. It just has to be there to extend drives. This is a fascinating matchup, and it's going to be overtly physical. I do want to go ahead and get to the chat, though.
All right, let's go to Ammo Cat One. He says, Georgia is going to destroy Ole Miss and Tennessee. I think they're just a better football team. I don't even know if I'm going to watch these games. It's not even going to be close.
Yeah, I disagree with that 100%. I just think you're a Georgia fan that's hyped up, and that's okay. That's okay.
Let's go to Mr. Bucknuts. He says, I got Ole Miss, and for one reason and one reason only, I think that pass rush is going to be better on Saturday.
Well, and again, we talked about this with Arkansas going against Ole Miss. We talked about this multiple times. If you're Ole Miss, I don't think you have to rob Peter to pay Paul up front in this game to stop the run or the pass. I don't think you got to bring a tidal wave of blitzers. I don't think you have to run stunt, whether you're running slants, tons, Texas, whatever, and get guys out of position. Not saying you don't, but I think you show it and bring it sometimes. I think you show it and don't bring it. And I think you can play a lot of base in this game. If I won't miss early, I'm showing pressure and getting back to base because I just want to know early. Can I beat you straight up or at least stalemate you straight up? Because if I can do that, then it's just a matter of time before laying them over with the Etch-a-Sketch and drawing in the dirt can figure out something against the defense. That's the question, and that's the difference, I think, in this Ole Miss team as opposed to the teams in the past. They had to trick Georgia. They had to trick them, whether it was on offense or defense. I don't think Ole Miss has to trick Georgia this year.
All right, let's go to Drinko.
I was going to say thing. Sorry to interrupt you, Blaine. I was thinking of this. I think it also is very beneficial for Lane Kiffin to have gotten a look at what this Georgia defense did to stifle Steve Sarkisian in Texas when they were in Austin. It's kind of like you're playing a scramble and you got a 12-footer and you need to make it to win that tournament. Your boy gives you a look. He goes first. You get a look at that putt, and then you get to make one. I think Lane Kiffin's going to go take everything and say, hey, this is what Georgia did on defense when they really needed it, when they really had to go on the road and beat the number one team in the country. These are some things that we can look for, and maybe that can help them get out to a little bit better head start than they otherwise would have.
And also, I want to go back to the first game of the year, because I think Jackson Dart is a better player than Cade Klubnik, but I think the way they are built and the way they play are somewhat similar. So I wonder if you look at Georgia's defense, the way they played against Clemson and Cade Klubnik. I know the skill guys on the outside weren't what they're going to see this week or what they saw against Texas, but maybe that modus operandi for Georgia's defense is a little bit closer to what you may see against Jackson Dart, because as good as Quinn Ewers is, he wasn't a guy you had to worry about scrambling, right? So how many times did you have a spy on Cade Klubnik in big downs because he could run? Those are the things you can kind of garner from it.
All right, let's go to Drinko. He says, Carson Beck will throw them out of this game, but Ole Miss offense kind of held back with all the injuries. So in my opinion, I think it's going to be a little bit of a low-scoring game than what other people think.
I actually agree with that. What's the over-under in this game? Can we look
it's
that up?
It's 54 really and a half.
God, I like the under in that one. I know we got kind of fooled by a couple of the games this past week on the over-unders, but I didn't see Ole Miss dropping a 63-piece with Cajun fries and a honey biscuit against Arkansas. And then what South Carolina did to A&M is assault in half the United States.
All right, let's go to Asset Activities. He says the matchup to watch will be Dart versus this Georgia line. The scramble ability will come into play in this football game.
Yeah, and Cone, I'm gonna talk about Shopify for a second. Then we're gonna get to rapid fire here, and then get back to the chat. Remember, no calls today. Please hit that like and subscribe button. Thank everybody for hopping in here. But with a quarterback like Jackson Dart, you know this moment is huge. This is a career defining moment for him. You don't want to take away his stinger by telling him not to create, right? Mm-hmm. Hey, take your chance. Be aggressive. I want you to be as aggressive as you were last week against Arkansas, but there is a fine line to watch between being aggressive and being stupid. And you could get away with things against that Arkansas defense that I don't think you're going to be able to get away with against this Georgia defense. Where is that line, do you think, for Jackson Dart? Or do you tell him just go let it all hang out? We'll sort out the bodies after the war.
No, he's going to let it all hang out. I mean, Lane Kiffin recruits a certain type of quarterback for a reason. That Matt Corral type quarterback, that Jackson Dart type guy who's an old school gunslinger who wants to take risks. What I find more interesting is, at what point does Lane Kiffin decide when to put it in Jackson Dart's hands and when not to? What I mean by that is, let's say you're down 7 and it's early in the second quarter and it's 1st and 10 and you're trying to get a drive started. And usually you would call a halfback counter because you really like that in practice. Are you going to call that run game, or are you going to put the football in Jackson Dart's hands early to let him just say, hey, we're going to win or lose by what our quarterback does? Not necessarily abandoning the run, but in other scenarios where you would run the football, because that's really what Lane Kiffin's offenses are built on, do you call those runs, or do you call drop back pass for Jackson Dart even earlier in the game?
Well, I think you can look. Yeah, well, I think you can look at the other side too, and how much does Kirby Smart trust Carson Beck at this point?
That's what we were saying at the beginning.
We were talking about that. You have 11
interceptions. I mean, it's to the point. And you remember Kirby Smart with Stetson Bennett. Like, he kept Stetson in a box, and Stetson thrived. I wonder if he tries to put Carson in that box for this football game. Let's go to UTP. What's up, man? Says Carson Wreck going to have a multiple interception game, yet Georgia wins. I think that Georgia's defense will make a couple plays.
Well, they're going to make a couple plays. I mean, I don't think the question is who's going to make a couple plays. It's, you know, how long can you contain Jackson Dart and what this Ole Miss offense wants to do? Because, again, just like every other coach in the world, Lane has some stuff that he's been saving for this game. When the schedule came out and Ole Miss saw this, Lane's smart enough and he's been around the block to know, hey, there's some things I'm going to run earlier in the year to set up in this game. Depending on how it is and depending on how close it is. And honestly, I think depending on how Carson Beck looks, I think is going to depend on how much risk Lane Kiffin takes early in this game.
Blaine, that was one of the things we were saying when your connection was still coming back on. Like, it's just not good enough for Ole Miss on defense to say, you know what, Carson Beck's been turning the football over. Let's figure out a way to turn him over and we're good. Yeah. No, he's been doing that. They're 7-1. Look at the way they beat Texas on the road and Carson Beck didn't play well. Ole Miss's offense is going to have to put up points if they want to win.
No, all right, let's go to Mac. Mac, what's up, brother? You want to get Shopify real quick, Jake? I apologize.
No, go ahead.
All right, let's go to Mac. Lane is great on script. Once it gets clunky like LSU game, his teams never respond well. Kirby's going to eat him up late in this football game.
See, I think this year that's been the anomaly. I agree with you this year, but in the past, I promise you, I know all these coaches, that's not the truth. That's been one of the most surprising things about this. There's a reason why you look in the past and Lane Kiffin's teams, even when they've started out slow, have ended up scoring 50 points. Or he's in the third quarter throwing the clipboard up. This year it has been the anomaly. I mean, we talked about it with Mincy. It seems like the first drive, Ole Miss has been the best team in the history of college football. And then they just go Drew Barrymore from 51st dates and forget the rest of the game. That was not the case against Arkansas, right? They kept evolving. Will that happen this game against Georgia, which is an entirely different defense from a personnel depth and talent standpoint? You're right. This year, that's been one of the most surprising things. But in the past, that hasn't been the case. But I can tell you what is the case. All right. If you're starting a business, right, whether it's a podcast, whether you employ nobody or you employ a bunch of people, and you want to take a big load off of your plate, if you want to be able to focus on just certain things and not everything, you need to check out our friends at Shopify. They do an incredible job selling. That's why their conversion rate is absolutely incredible. It's the number one conversion rate in the country. We don't have the soundboard today. Normally, we make the cha-ching noise, but I'm telling you guys, people ask me all the time. They're like, hey, I'm starting a podcast, starting a show. What do I need to know? The first word I say is Shopify. They take so much off of your plate, as I mentioned. And right now, if you go to shopify.com/CRAIN, all lowercase, right? Shopify.com/CRAIN, all lowercase. You can get a $1 per month trial. Again, I'm telling you guys, we always say work smarter, not harder. Shopify is the ultimate arbiter of that. Again, that's why we use them at the Daily Wire. They make our selling, they make our just being able to maneuver and focus on the things we need to focus unbelievably easy. It is a peace of mind. It is a breath of fresh air. Shopify.com/CRAIN, all lowercase, for that $1 per month trial. I'm telling you guys, go check them out. But speaking about checking out, David, let's get into some rapid fire here.
All right, rapid fire. First one up here. The Saints have fired head coach Dennis Allen. Obviously, New Orleans started 2-0, but this firing comes after seven straight losses, and it just hadn't been good there for a couple of seasons now. Your thoughts?
Well, I mean, you can't say they didn't give him a chance. I mean, they held on to you know, this floating door longer than Leo DiCaprio did in the Titanic, and he was on there a while. Just at some point, Kate Winslet's got to move her ass over. We're going to freeze to death. And they ended up freezing to death. I do want to say this. I think Dennis Allen is a tremendous defensive coordinator. Some guys are just built better coordinators than they are head coaches. They're two totally different jobs. It's like one being the Secretary of State and the other being the president. They're two very important jobs, right? A lot of people to take after and a lot of people to look after, but they're totally different jobs. We've seen college all the time. You look at Will Muschamp. I can go down the list of guys that were fantastic coordinators, but just weren't great head coaches. Dennis Allen's going to be fine. The NFL recycles coaches. He'll be a defensive coordinator somewhere and probably do a damn good job, but they needed to fire him. I know a lot of the Saints fans are finally glad this is done. They want Mickey Loomis next. I don't know about that. I know, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes there. But I do want to say something about Dennis Allen real quick. I met him one time. It was down in Mobile at the Senior Bowl. He did not know me from Adam, yet he sat there on the sidewalk and we talked for about 10 minutes. He was unbelievably cordial, unbelievably gracious with his time to a random person off the street. So, you know, Dennis Allen, the person, heck of a person, at least from my experiences as far as the head coach. Not great. The question is now, who do you go get?
Well, that's what I was going to ask.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, I'm immediately going to try to get the offense coordinator from the Lions. Give me Ben Johnson immediately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How much money can I throw at you to come coach at the Saints?
Yeah,
no, I agree.
That gets to Jake's point. Like, are you going to go the coordinator route or do you go with a former head coach? I mean, look at what Dan Quinn's doing in Washington. You know, now, will that continue? I don't know. But you saw the success he had in Atlanta. Then it kind of faltered. And Washington said, hey, we like that guy. Let's try and build off our young quarterback, Jaden Daniels, with a guy like Dan Quinn. I mean, guys, John Gruden, is there any shot in the world John Gruden goes and coaches the Saints?
He got me feeling nicey. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, the way he's blowing up on TikTok, I think he can still do it. The other question is, how interested is Belichick still interested? Like, would you make a run at Belichick? I mean, he's out there with, like, his 24-year-old girlfriend, which, look.
Dressing up in Halloween costumes and mermaid suits.
It's love. You're right, Blaine. It is
go ahead. What were you going to say?
No, go ahead, Cody.
Well, I was just going to ask, while we're talking about the Saints, I just wanted to see, did y'all check out Michael Thomas's comment online about Derek Carr, and did you see Derek Carr's response? I have to get your thoughts on this.
I didn't see Derek Carr's response. What did he say?
He basically came out at the podium and was like, yeah, I saw that. It's really unfortunate. I honestly don't get it. He's never called me. He's never talked to me about it. I've tried to call him several times. He said, I've played football for a long time. I've had a bunch of different teammates. Michael Thomas is the only guy that doesn't like me. And sometimes I guess that happens in life.
Yeah, it's part of the deal. I was surprised Derek Carr didn't start crying at the press conference, to be honest with you, what we've seen in the
Maybe
past.
They
I thought
early.
He handled it well. But, I mean, it's like Michael Thomas has gone from – you know, a guy that was just dominating, and I know the injuries, and they've been unfortunate. I just don't know how this helps you. Like, are you done playing? Like, are you trying to transition into the media now? Like, is this a, I'm trying to get the spotlight on me because I can't get it on the field anymore? Or is this like, man, I really just have always hated Derek Carr, and now's my chance to take a shot at him. I'm just not, I'll go back to what I say about coaches and press conferences. Is what I'm about to say going to help my team in my career or hurt my team in my career? To that point, I don't know what his motives are, but I thought Derek Carr handled it about as well as you
did. Yeah. Well, I certainly hope Michael Thomas isn't transitioning to the media because I could barely even read the tweets he was putting up there. That Buckeye education was on full display. But Blaine, what do you make of a guy who isn't out there helping the team, right? You're not even out there helping lead this team to wins or losses, and you're just criticizing the quarterback on social media.
Yeah, man. When's the last time you played?
It was
an ankle for 2 years. Michael Thomas is about as relevant as Auburn football. Who cares? Like, do I think Derek Carr's a mediocre quarterback? For sure. Do I think Derek Carr's scared? Derek Carr's has played way too much football to be afraid of anything on the field. He's seen it all. So Michael Thomas is irrelevant. He is irrelevant in the game of NFL. He won't make it to media. If he does, hell, I won't listen to him. I don't listen to most of those cats anyway. It's only getting worse and worse and worse. Can he be right and wrong at the same time? That's the question.
Blaine, go ahead, Coney. I was going to get to the chat, see if what Saints fans are saying.
Well, are there any Saints comments, Blaine?
We have Lars Corville that says Derek Carr wears way too much mascara.
He just kind of got them raccoon eyes a little bit. I mean, why does he look like the lead singer from Green Day to me sometimes?
Yeah, we have a lot of Nate Oates to the Saints in the chat.
Yeah,
here we go. You've started a real movement.
You have started a movement.
Let's go to Michael P. He says, Ben Johnson definitely wants that Dallas job, and you can bet your bottom dollar that'll be open after this year.
Hey, by the way, did y'all see Dax out for several weeks with a hamstring injury? And also, he got caught on the sideline saying, we effing suck. It's just to the point now where if you're a Cowboys fan, I mean, this has got to be rock bottom, right? There's been a lot of bottom, like, you know, a lot of we're struggling and it hasn't been good. But this is like rock bottom. I don't know how it gets much worse than this. It's to the point now where should the Cowboys tank?
I always hate to see professional teams tank. It looks like they're just doing that naturally right now. But I brought up Dan Quinn. I brought up Dan Quinn's success here in his second stint as a head coach. That the natural flip side of that coin is, well, look at Mike McCarthy after winning a Super Bowl with Green Bay, and he's kind of struggling. And really the same in Jacksonville right now. You know, like it's not working out with Doug Peterson having won a Super Bowl in Philly. But talking about Dallas, since you brought it up in the struggles, did you see Ezekiel Elliott got left out of the team trip because he's missing and tardy for team meetings?
It's just a disaster. It's a disaster. Like, look, Mike McCarthy's toast, right? He's got to be toast. Jerry's, you can't survive this, right? Like if it keeps going this way, like if they end up winning 5-6 games, Mike McCarthy's got to go. And then I think if I'm Ben Johnson, maybe I do hold out for that job. Right? If you're Ben Johnson, you're the OC for the Lions right now, and you get a call from the Saints, and they say, we want to offer you it, but you've got to take it right now. Like, what? First off, you're coaching your team. Or, like, we need a promise or something in that realm of when your season is done, we're going to be first on your list. Do you say yes and just string them along because the Dallas opening isn't there right now?
Well, I think the Lions have a legitimate chance to win the Super Bowl, and he's a big part of that. And
You picked him, right?
Yeah, I picked him to win the Super Bowl, and I'm just loving everything that Jared Goff is doing right now. You want to talk about completion percentage? And look, Ben Johnson's a big part of that. I don't think you can leave this right now and leave a city that has been dying for a Super Bowl appearance, and you could possibly even win it. You can't just leave like in the middle of the season. I don't think he would be forced to. I think you just say, yes, of course, I'm going to be there. If the Dallas Cowboys offer me to be the next head coach, the obvious answer is yes, but I'm going to go get this Super Bowl win first, right?
Yeah, I always call it the band breakup syndrome. Like, right? It's like, listen, Jared Goff's the lead singer. He's the quarterback. All right, but you're playing bass and you got some vocals too, but you're famous because Jared Goff's famous. So are you willing to leave the lead singer to go out on your own, to go solo, drop that new album? I think if it's the Cowboys, it's a no-brainer. If you know, Interscope Records is offering you a huge contract to go solo, you got to take it. But at the end of the day, that's a great position to be in. And I think it just shows you, you know, culturally what the Lions have cooking, not just on the field, but off the field. You can really tell those guys are together. But there's some guys that aren't together, David, and that's what's next in rapid fire here.
Yeah, no doubt. The ULM coaching meltdown situation on the sidelines. I think you have some personal experience with this one.
Yeah, we have a clip of this, and I want to play the clip to contextualize it for our audience before we dive into it. Can we go ahead and play the clip of the ULM coach freaking out? Here he is on the sidelines, the offensive line coach. Somebody's not getting on the field. The headset, blown up, get off the field. I'm going to chase him. I'm screaming. I'm stomping. Then I push him. Mm. Then I push him again. So here's where I'm at on this. I know this guy personally, right? I know Cam, Coach Blankenship personally. I was coaching when he was playing. The head coach, Brian Vincent at ULM, Cam played for him. I know Cam's a damn good football coach. He's incredibly passionate. He really loves his guys. Now, it's funny. He was kind of soft-spoken as a player, but obviously as a coach, he's a little bit more outspoken. He really knows ball, and I know he can connect with his guys. And even he'll tell you, and he put this statement out, he let emotions get the best of him. I've got no problem with yelling. I've got no problem with slamming a headset. But my rule always was, I'm not going to put my hands on you. You're not going to put your hands on me. And that's where I think he crossed the line. Stomping around and chewing ass and all this stuff, that's one thing. But the minute you put your hands on a guy, I always said, listen, if I put my hands on you, it's because I'm expecting you to put your hands on me. So I never felt bad for a coach that put his hand on a player and then got his ass beat. Because that's a line that if you cross, I think is a bridge too far. We can be in this thing together. I can be as passionate. I can be as upset. You can be as passionate. You can be as upset. But the minute you start putting your hands on people, that's when we got a problem. I know he understands that. He's got a bright future ahead of him. I'm telling you guys, I know him. I know him personally. He's a really good dude. He's a dude you'd love to sit down and have a beer with. But he lost control of his emotions. And what he needs to do is turn this into a teaching moment for his guys too. To be like, do you see what I did? Like, I'm going to sit here and preach to you guys responsibility and not letting your emotions get the best of you. We all make mistakes. I'm going to be better because of this. Use my loss as a lesson here, and I know he will going forward.
Yeah, I do want to read a statement quickly by the player. This is Drew Hutchinson. He said, I'm sure by now most of you have seen the video yesterday of Coach Cam reprimanding me and eventually pushing me. We have since talked, and he has sincerely apologized for his behavior. Coach Cam and I have a good relationship, and I appreciate his passion for this game and for this team. Coaches are humans too, and just as players learn from their mistakes, I think that coaches can learn from theirs as well. With that being said, I still love football and this university and this team. I'd like to leave you all with a quote I heard at church this morning. Vengeance is in the hands of the Lord and forgiveness is in mine. So I thought that that was a great post right there by Drew Hutchinson. Obviously, you know, I had a feeling that you were going to bring up not putting your hands on a guy, because at that point in the video, you've lost everyone once you've pushed a kid. Now, there's a difference when you're grabbing a guy's jersey to try and get him into position because he's in a 3 technique and you need him in a 5 technique. And sometimes you put your hands on players for different reasons. This is obviously going up and you're pushing a guy. What I wanted to ask you about, up before that moment, before he pushes him where he clearly crosses a line there, just him, you know, losing his mind on the sidelines and sort of a you know, a la Will Muschamp or old school Nick Saban. A lot of people were just coming out and yelling at Coach Cam for that sort of behavior. And that's football to me, right? Like, that's the football you and I grew up with playing. That's the football that your dad played in and coached and was like as a coach. Can you even coach that way, even not putting your hands on guys? Can you even be that passionate on the sidelines without sort of social media and viral clips going on about you?
Well, I think that's one of the reasons Nick Saban got out of it. I think not, and it's not just about stuff going viral on social media. I think it's the mindset of young people nowadays. Like, young people don't respond the way, like that quote you read from Drew Hutchinson is rare. Mm-hmm. I think it is rare in today's society with young people. So it's not just that. People use it in negative recruiting against you and stuff like that. So that's not saying you can't be passionate. Hell, I was as passionate as anybody. But that type of in-game behavior, look, you want to get the guys on the sideline, rip their ass while they're in the huddle around you. That's one thing, right? That's the group together. If you're on the practice field and it goes down like that, all right, that's on the practice field. Sometimes I'm not talking about the pushing, but getting upset like that. But during a game, there's a couple problems. One, you're 5 yards out on the field. Like, you're in the field of play. Like, you're going to get us a penalty. You could get us a 15-yard penalty by doing that. And two, you really don't gain anything from going that nuts in that moment. Just get him off the field. You can yell and scream and get him over there. And then if you want to cuss somebody out on the sideline, sometimes that's how it goes, and some players will take it. But I think it's more about who can take coaching like that nowadays, and I think that's why you've seen a lot of these old heads get out of the game, because guys just fall apart. And now what can they do, David? They can quit and go straight in the transfer portal. A lot of times you didn't have that option unless you wanted to sit out a year. So, look, it's unfortunate that it happened, but I think he's going to be better for it. I really do.
Yeah, well, what a great response from the kid and from the coach. I know that's a buddy of yours, so we'll keep tracking that situation. I expect everyone to be better off for that having happened, which is good. Last one for rapid fire. Can we play the video of these police altercations at the Georgia and Florida game? There was one in particular, police officers just beating on some football fans. You know, I always hesitate to play clips that are sort of cut after altercations are started because they can get taken out of context. I have no idea, you know, what transpired. Maybe this use of force was justified. Maybe it wasn't. But, man, this it was certainly intense to see. That's for sure, Jake.
Yeah, let's play this clip. He's got one's got the headlock, and this guy's just, you know, they're kind of wailing on him.
This like, is just.
That, look. I mean, And again, to your point, I agree with you. Like, I don't know all the context of what happened before that. But having said that, I still can get a good feel on the situation. One guy is sitting down. An older guy is sitting down. I don't think he had a gun. I don't think he had a knife. I don't think he was, like, holding a child underneath there. And I'm all for, you know, I understand how important and how blessed we are to have the type of people we have in the police, emergency responders, firemen, all that. Those people are the salt of the earth, but there's always some bad apples in every batch, right? There's always some in every walk of life, from the highest paid jobs to the lowest paid jobs, from civil servants to public servants to in the private sector. I just, especially the guy at the bottom, I'm not understanding why you're hammer fisting somebody that's sitting down in the back of the head. I always think, What if I was in that moment and that was my grandfather that cop had? What would I do? Mm-hmm. Like what do you do there? I don't want to go too far. That seemed a little excessive to me just from that clip without having any context before it. But in that moment, David, I'm having a hard time feeling why that cop, for a police officer to act like that, I would have to feel like your life is threatened or somebody else's life is threatened.
Obviously, like with the advent of social media, these moments like this, these clips can just go viral in a matter of a half hour, right? Even before a football game ends, you can be seeing these clips all around the world. And like the parts of it that I hate the most are, like I said, getting taken out of context. The behavior that happened before that video clip started could not only have completely justified the police officer's behavior, but could justify far worse. I don't know. Or the behavior that transpired before that clip started could completely exonerate the person. And you're looking at a situation where that police officer should be fired. I have no idea other than what you all are seeing right there in the moment. I also hate how a clip like this can't even be shared without some sort of racial component happening with it, right? Like that's just how charged our society is now. Obviously that the police officer there was African-American and the guy was white, but this is where we need, you know, as much video footage as possible. And hopefully those body cams are being worn. Blaine, I see you're in now. We just played that clip from the Georgia and Florida game, just talking about how we have no context other than the actual video clip that's getting played, but it certainly was tough to watch.
Yeah. I mean, felt a little excessive, didn't it?
Well, I don't know what transpired beforehand, but when you watch, it's just like,
the old boy's throwing hammer fists on like a 7-year old man.
You've got to like feel genuinely threatened for your life, right? To behave like that.
Yeah, like, is somebody 100%. Grabbing for my gun? That's the only thing in that scenario with his arm around.
So in like, a stadium full of 100,000 people.
Maybe he thought he was grabbing for my gun in the stadium. It's just, it's an unfortunate situation. I mean, but, you know, those things happen. Again, that's why I am all for letting the facts come out, seeing the whole video. And in a society that is charged with clips and snippets to incite and enrage, whether it be racially, whether it be socially, I need all the facts. I need to know because typically your first gut reaction in something like that can be somewhat right. But there's a brief bit of context that you're missing that can maybe change your opinion to the point where, you know, it's even, or, you know, you even take another side.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Blaine, let's go ahead and get to the chat.
All right. Let's go with the DA. So let the roles be reversed. If you know what I mean, and the cities would be burning right now.
And that's, I mean, to David's point, yes. And I mean, we've seen in those instances when the context come out, you know, some people are like, wow, I really misjudged that. But the saddest part isn't just that action. The saddest part is we have people that realize how much money they can make off getting people upset in a racial segment like that. That's one of the reasons we find ourselves in the problem we are. Not because there's a racial problem that exists. It's that because people exacerbate it by amplifying it and treating it because of the non-context that we're not all getting on the outside to really piss people off. Because if you really want to piss somebody off, make something look racist.
Yeah, and they make the decision on who was right or wrong just based off race. Of ethnicity. Yeah. Like that, like exactly right. We have to have some sort of objective right and wrong in our society.
Yeah.
Let's go to Kevin Chavez. What's up, Kevin? He says, I feel like the cop's feelings were probably threatened with the amount of people that he was dealing with at one time.
Again, we can throw all that. We can have a whole X-Files season off of what could have happened leading up to that. I just, again, I hate that it happened, and I need all the facts. All right, I want to get back to the chat, but speaking about facts, all right, when it comes down to getting the best American-sourced meat that there is, all right, whether it's seafood, whether it's chicken, right, whether it's beef or what steak, Good Ranchers, I'm telling you guys. I mean, literally, my wife, Reed, has thawed out the chicken all day today. We're eating some tonight. Cone, well, we had it at your house this weekend. It was a smorgasbord of deliciousness at Good Ranchers. You don't have to worry about antibiotics. You don't have to worry about them juicing it with a bunch of vaccines and stuff. This is as pure and as good as it gets. And the deals are fantastic. I'm about to tell you how you can get a free Thanksgiving ham in a second. Mm. But speaking from experience, I'm telling you guys, Good Ranchers is the way to go. They're a company that cares about the stuff we care about. They keep everything in-house. Like I said, it's not sourced from overseas. It is grown right here in the good old United States. And when you go to goodranchers.com and you use code Booster, they're going to give you a free Thanksgiving ham with your first subscription order to a box. So don't even worry, all right, about going out and getting a ham or anything like that. They're going to give you one for free. All right, that's a hell of a deal. David, quickly, what is your favorite food that your wife has ever prepared with Good Ranchers, or you have yourself?
Ooh, the ribeye steak, it really is my go-to. She makes two or three of them a week for me, but the most recent was the ground beef in the chili. I have a nice chili recipe that I make every Halloween.
Your chili goes super hard, by Thank the way. You. It's really good. Blaine, what about you?
I'm a big ribeye guy. Look, as many ribeyes as I can, everything they have is good. And the biggest thing to me is it's hard. Like, it's hard to transition to seafood, and they've done that extremely really well. I'm a seafood guy. Look, I'm from the 251, Mobile, Causeway, Blue Crab, that whole thing. Their seafood is legit. It's fresh, and it's good.
All right, let's get to the chat. Then we're going to get to these donos and get on out of here.
All right, let's go to Shadow 2. He says, cops usually aren't in stands unless something is going down. They had to be warned before getting up there.
Yeah, there was another video I saw too. I think at the same game where there was a police altercation that looked pretty brutal. I mean, they were hitting the guy with a taser. And listen, that stuff happens. It happens at concerts. It happens at sporting events. It happens all over. But I do want to say we're very thankful. At least I think I speak for all of us saying we're very thankful for what the police do. Look, like I said, is there some bad apples in the batch? There is. That'll never be eliminated, right? Hell, even with the robots. But again, sometimes people can go too far, and we'll see what comes of it. That's why we have a system of justice and a court of law.
All right, let's go to KT. What's up, man? He said, can Jackson Dart get back in the Heisman race with an extraordinary performance this Saturday?
So that's a great question, because I was sitting here looking at the Heisman race this morning, and I think you've got to say it's Dylan Gabriel and Cam Ward right now. And look, I know Travis Hunter's right there, but if Dylan Gabriel keeps doing what he's doing, it's going to be very hard to beat him. I know Miami keeps winning, but I think there's a lot better chance that Oregon ends up undefeated than Miami does. But outside of that, I mean, do we think Genty's done? Do we think after that? No. I don't think he is either. So right now,
those are the four. Those are the top four.
Would you have Dylan one?
I would have Dylan and Cam Ward 1A, 1B, Travis Hunter. Yeah, Travis Hunter right there, and then Ashton Jeanty. Those are my top four. And Jeanty, what, 149 yards and what was it, two touchdowns last week? Again, when 135 yards, 145 yards, and a couple touchdowns is your worst performance, you're in a really good spot. I do think he needs to make a run at Barry Sanders' record, though. Even if he doesn't break it, we need one of those like 1998 old school home run race sorts of things with him for people to be talking about it throughout November.
Well, if and I want to say this, if Jackson Dart goes out against Georgia and throws for 300, you know, and runs for a touchdown, throws for a couple touchdowns, doesn't turn the ball over and they win, and Ole Miss ends up going 10-2, it's going to be really, really hard, I think, to keep him out of New York possibly or probably because they're going to make the playoff. But to win it, like I don't think he can control whether he wins it or not right now. No. I think other people have to fall off to an extent where him balling out can elevate him to that spot.
Dylan Gabriel right now to me is just he's just balling cooking on another. You know how hard it is? I saw a stat. He leads the Big Ten in passing yards and also leads the Big Ten in completion percentage.
We say that. Bo Nix did the same damn thing. It's a lot of it is that scheme. Will Stein is the greatest pitching coach in college football.
Well,
that's the way that I put it.
This is the month to win it, right? This is the month it's won. November is the month that it's either won or lost. And as far as Jackson Dart goes, he won't have the benefit, I don't think, he won't have the benefit of playing in the SEC championship the week before that vote is taken to sort of be in people's minds.
That's a great point. And it's looking right now, pretty damn good chance Dylan is at Oregon and Cam is at Miami. Mm-hmm.
Serious question right here, fellas, and this is directed at David. Jake, also wants your opinion. Let's go to Kyle K. He says, fellas, beans or no beans in chili? No beans is the correct answer.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people say no beans in chili or it's no longer chili. I put both baked beans and kidney beans in my chili. That's how I eat it. Look, we can fight if you want, but I'd rather us just get along.
Well, the only beans that I like are barbecue baked beans, unless you put them in chili. I don't do lima beans. I don't count green beans because they're in the string thing and I put cheese and bacon on them anyway, so it doesn't count. I don't do kidney beans by themselves. I don't do pinto beans. Refried beans, I will say, okay, I'll do that, but that's in a different form. But you put the kidney beans in chili, that's the only way you can hide it from me. I actually prefer them in chili, but would I hate it if they weren't in there? Would I cry myself to sleep and wonder, where are the beans? Where are the beans? The magical fruit. No, I won't.
All right. Well, if you're talking about lima beans, now you're getting into the Brunswick stew category, which I think I will say I also make a mean Brunswick stew, and we can go either way with it.
Cone, we used to go to this dove shoot out at Beck's Turf Farm. And they had the best Brunswick stew. I'm
saying, why do you remember that?
Because of a photographic memory. I took pictures of it with my mind.
All right, I'm going to get to these donations. We're going to start with a $5 donation from Garrett Cole. God, man, I wish you pitched better in the World Series. He says, how about those Gamecocks? Could win out if we beat Clemson. Hashtag Cox by 90. Hashtag Norris Monster.
Wow. Yeah, no, we talked a lot about it in the recap yesterday. And what makes, you know, if you're a South Carolina fan right now, and it's funny, a lot of the talk was with Shane Beamer. Well, you know, you had Spencer Rattler last year and Leggett, and you were so bad up front. You've been here for a while, and we're kind of losing hope about the future. If you're a South Carolina fan and you don't feel good about the future after watching those things they got run around, I don't know what to tell you. Because guess what? Typically, younger guys get more consistent. Mm. And Shane's going to have Lenoris from a toddler to an adult. He didn't get Spencer as a toddler, right? He adopted him right after he Bruce Wayne'd him, okay, and brought him in there and then helped him, and he grew in that short period of time. But when I look at some of the young talent and just how much fun it looks like it is to play at South Carolina, I've coached there. I look at on the defensive side. I look at that physical kind of turning of the page. South Carolina fans better get ready. You better get ready. I think Shane Beamer is about to make South Carolina great again. Wow. All right. I don't know what that
you're gonna make a hat
anagram is. All right. MSCGA, MISCA, whatever it is. If you're looking into the future, right, and there's a long way to go. And Clemson looks a whole hell of a lot more gettable, don't they? But when I look at the athleticism that South Carolina has, it's kind of got that old. You remember when Spurrier had them cooking? They were big, they were fast, and they were pissed. And that's what South Carolina looks like to me.
South Carolina, people don't. South Carolina's huge.
Huge. But Norris Sellers is huge.
Rocket Sanders, big back, tight end, big. Nicholas Harbor, absolute treat.
Dylan Stewart, freak.
Absolutely. Let's go to a $2 donation from Bubba and the old man Auburn Sports Talk. What's up, dude? It says, Jake, when will Auburn stop hurting me?
Well, I mean, never. You signed up for that. You know that. But it's like I say, it's hard to kill what's dead inside. Again, what I've said about Auburn is this. Auburn fans have a right to be pissed off right now. They should. This season's been a total embarrassment and a disaster. Hugh Freeze is supposed to be best at, Auburn is the worst at. Mm-hmm. The decision that was made from a personnel standpoint in the offseason was horrific. You tied yourself to Peyton. Not only that, you brought Peyton Thorne here. You brought the guy. You brought Brutus into the Senate meeting, okay? And then you let him in there when the knife was hanging out of your back at the end of last year. So by doing that, you have now put yourself, you have sped up like your own timeline. That's what you've done. Instead of, you know, Auburn winning 7-8 games this year and it being okay, maybe for a young quarterback to come in next year and win 8 games. Now there's no more of that. You can't miss next year, in my opinion, right? You can't go 4-8 again next year and survive. Now, I am smart enough to realize that he is bringing in better players. And you can say what you want about the coaching, and there's plenty to critique there. Not giving the ball to Jarquez Hunter is incomprehensible. I don't understand it. I can't explain it. He said he wasn't hurt. The coaching decisions have been really, really bad. And you made a lot of decisions on staff turnover. But I do think there is help coming. And like I said last week, they are recruiting a type of person, not just a type of player. Because coaching only goes so far. And this older group at Auburn has been a bad batch. I'm sorry. I know they're great guys. That's amazing. If you want to just be a great guy, start a nonprofit, right? Start a dog walking business or a daycare. But this older group doesn't know how to win football games. They don't got it in them. They don't got that dog in them that Diego Pavi and them has. And you know what? Sometimes you just don't have it. It's like when we had that beauty contest, we showed that girl is like 300 pounds who they let win that Miss Alabama contest. That ain't how it works in this, right? Fat isn't the new skinny. Old isn't the new young. Losing isn't the new winning. Get these guys, get their ass out of here and bring in some guys that know how to win because we're sick of watching it.
Send Annie a voice note.
Hey, sis. So, okay, you know that cozy hoodie you always steal from Charlie after your workouts? Well, I just went to Lululemon and saw they have the same one for women now. I think it's called Steady State. Just throwing the idea out there, since you haven't added your wish list in the group chat yet. Plus, I know how much you love matching Charlie. Anyway, talk later. I'll see you at Run Club.
Shop Women's Steady State now at lululemon.com.
All right, let's go to a $5 donation from Q's Mode. Appreciate it, Q's. Can we get one episode of the Crane & Co. Wives plus Motstick Stacy talking sports with David, Jake, and Blaine serving the women breakfast sandwiches?
Q's. Right. No, I'm just kidding. No, maybe.
Yeah, so, that's a hard maybe.
Let's go to a $5 donation from RTR Jimmy. What's up? He says, Kalen DeBoer needs this win, and he needs it bad Saturday. What's your guys' thoughts?
Oh, it's a J.G. Wentworth situation if you're an Alabama fan. You want your win, and you want it now. The question becomes, because I think the level of excitement if Kalen DeBoer wins this game from the Alabama fan base won't be as fanatical as the level of disappointment in him if they lose it.
True.
So, like, I mean, David, you know, you're married to Darby Lou. Congratulations. She's an awesome lady. The daughter of obviously Richard Todd. You've got your pulse on that fan base. You know, we all try and be, but you're like literally living in it right now. If Kalen DeBoer loses this game, what does that mean for, not that they're going to fire him, I'm not saying that, but what does that mean for next year for Alabama when you lose Jalen Milroe, when you lose some of these guys that have saved you in a couple of these games? What does the expectation for next year become as acceptable moving forward to make them feel better about the guy who replaced the greatest of all time?
What I've experienced the last few weeks talking to these Alabama fans is exactly what you just said. I don't think the excitement for winning at LSU in the moment, it'll be crazy, right? But the next day, they're still going to look down and say, wait, we still have two losses. The excitement for winning that game isn't going to match the disappointment if you have three losses and now you're out of college football playoff contention. And you're talking about Darby Lou. Before this show started, I sat down there in the kitchen with her for 30 minutes. We were trying to figure out a way for Alabama to play in the SEC title game, right? You need Georgia to go on the road and lose to Ole Miss this weekend. So they pick up two losses and you own the head-to-head, but then they have to turn around and beat Tennessee. That gives them two losses, but you need Tennessee to lose another one. Like, it's crazy right now. I don't see a scenario really where Alabama can even make the conference championship. And I asked her, would you rather have no chance at playing in the SEC championship game, all right, or would you just rather go ahead and be locked into the college football playoff at 10-2 and not risk picking up that third loss? It's the question we've been asking for weeks. It's the question Texas A&M fans called in and said, yeah, lock us into the playoff. The answer seems to be the same across all fan bases right now. I will forego playing in the conference championship game if it means making one of those at-large spots in the college football playoff.
It's almost like cutting off your arm to save your body. Like, it's like literally, it's almost like that. Unless, to me, that's why I was shocked Texas A&M fans said that. Y'all have never won the SEC.
Yeah, true.
Like, it's true. Like Ole Miss, y'all have never won it. So, like, if you're Alabama and, you know, you've won it a lot, okay. If you're a team that's won it, okay, I can understand that. But if not, I don't know. That's just, it's just crazy that the you know, the prioritization of fans now.
$5 donation from the man from the 702. He says, Penn State's are frauds. Told you Caleb Downs would take away Tyler Warren. That's exactly what he did. Penn State is one and done in college football playoff. Bama Moneyline is our best bet this week.
Wow. Mm-hmm. First off, Caleb Downs didn't take away Tyler Warren. Andy Kotelnicki did. Let's get that straight right now. I watched Tyler Warren bring their ass down the field multiple times and then them take them right off of it. I want to say this. I gassed up Andy Kotelnicki, and I still think he's a hell of an offensive coordinator to play caller. I gassed up Andy Kotelnicki for 4 weeks, had him second on my Broyles Award. And if I'm a Penn State fan, what would upset me the most is not that we lost the game. It's how you lost it. You did not play aggressively from a play calling standpoint, and I think it bled through to the players on offense. You reverted and regressed totally back to the mean, and you became the reason why you couldn't get over the hump. You were scared to take the shots, all right? I understand if it's the COVID vaccine, but this ain't the COVID vaccine. This is offense. You were supposed to have changed the way it worked at Penn State because you brought in a guy who would Dr. Seuss the stuff every now and then. But you get up 10-0 against Ohio State, and then you take the ball, and you run and go hide. That's what Andy Kotelnicki did, and it's a damn shame, and the Penn State fans should be upset. If I'm James Franklin, I am literally, I'm not on the headset, and maybe James Franklin told him, Andy, hey, we're up 10-0. Let's play it a lot safer. I don't want to throw the game to him, which in that case, you don't ever deserve to win it. You don't ever deserve to win anything. Shame on Andy Kotelnicki for the way he called that game. Shame on Andy Kotelnicki for the way that he used Tyler Warren. And I feel bad for the Penn State fans because that scared-ass mentality that has cost Penn State on offense in a year where you thought they had broken through it, the glass ceiling, whatever the hell you want to call it. You can't run, you can't burst through the wall if you're afraid to run through it. They better grow from it or they're going to keep losing these games. And that scared money don't make no money on these streets.
All right, last donation of the day. It's a $5 donation from Miss Alice. Thank you, Alice. Go BYU? No way. Blaine, please read some of these poly player names for good luck. Sure. Pokekai Ahanga, Matavava Teis, John Tamalalapalala, and Chad Kwalalalala. All right, BYU. All right, undefeated.
I can't wait to watch Chad Koala.
Oh, man.
Yeah, he's a backup somewhere. Thanks for all the donations, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for the donations. Make sure you hit that subscribe button. Look, we got a ton of games to break down this week. Going to keep talking it. It's college football, NFL, all that stuff. Again, going remote, it's election week. Remember, if you want to take your mind off of it, hop over here in the trust tree. Let the Booster Club consume you. Let us talk sports. Be friends and other things as well. Appreciate everybody. Any parting thoughts here, gentlemen? Cone, you
just
first.
Doesn't feel right. Oh, sorry.
I said Cone first. Shut up.
Sorry.
Parting thoughts. Let me get to my bets for parting thoughts. I'll take the Bucks plus 8.5 minus 110, and then I'll take Chiefs Bucks largest lead under 15.5 minus 110.
Guess what? It's college basketball, and I'm betting it. Give me Cincinnati minus 36.5 tonight at home. I think they're playing Arkansas Pine Bluff. That's at minus 112. And then Duke It's Cooper Flag season, baby. Give me the Dukies minus 31. The kid's an absolute problem. Plant the flag at Cameron Indoor tonight, baby.
All right, pull mine up. If you took the over on my computer messing up today, congratulations. You hit. I'm taking the Bucks plus 10.5. I like that 10.5 number going off at minus 110, especially at home. Give me Kareem Hunt anytime touchdown that's going off at minus 180. Not the best odds, but you can bet your bottom dollar he's going to get in the end zone today.
Also, everybody get out there and vote. Right. Sure. I don't care if you live in a swing state or not. Go vote. Vote in your local elections. Those are even more important sometimes than the national elections.
Shout out Definitely. Peanut. R.I.P.
Yeah. R.I.P. Peanut. Appreciate you guys. And like peanuts rain here on this earth, we're going.